In the early 1960s, Vick was marketing director for the International Latex Corporation. ILC manufactured the Playtex bra. Vick was bright, young, aggressive, handled all of ILC's advertising in-house, produced television commercials, and so on. He was also constantly on the lookout for new products, like the time in Canada he discovered a revolutionary style of brassiere, one in which the support panels formed an X at the center. The American consumer remembers that as the popular so-called cross your heart bra. But this is the rest of the story. It was Vick who brought this cross your heart from Canada into the American market, and he also masterminded its original promotion. And so one September, he prepared to produce a television commercial describing the cross your heart concept for the first time. The ad was scheduled to air the following October 15. Everybody had arrived at the New York TV studio by 8 a.m. Vick was there, accompanied by the executive vice president of ILC. The camera crew was present. The lighting and sound engineers were present. And the director, everybody was there except. Everybody except the young lady who had been hired to model the brand new Cross Your Heart. She was not present, nor could she be reached. Everyone waited. Now it's 8:30 and no model. Vick suggested the crew go ahead and shoot some backgrounds. They did. They waited some more. 9:15, everybody's getting more and more nervous. Somebody finally got an answer from the modeling agency. They'd given the model the wrong calendar date. She was out of town. No other models were available. Vick swallowed hard. Here he had a new product, a new commercial, an unyielding deadline, and no model. Whom could they find to take her place on such short notice? There were secretaries in the building who might be willing to model the Cross Your Heart on camera. No way. Too shy. That left wives, a proposal greeted by a chorus of "Not with my wife, you don't." Then the director turned to Vick, and he said, "You're our last hope." He said, "Try it on." "Yeah, I would think so." Vick was flabbergasted. He wear a bra in front of millions of television viewers? Preposterous. But now Vick was skinny in those days, and the Cross Your Heart could be stuffed with tissue paper, and he would be posing in a black leotard and tights and a hood so nobody would recognize him. And thus assured of his virtual invisibility, Vick said okay. For the success of the new product, he'd do it, and he did it. And until this minute, you never knew. That was the very first Cross Your Heart commercial. Vick would never star in another. But in case you are ever asked in a trivia game, who was that lady on TV in the 34B? You will answer, that was no lady. That was Vick. That was Victor Kiam. That's right. The same Victor Kiam who liked his Remington electric shaver so much that he bought the company. You thought he'd never done a television commercial before. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Dr. Sarah Forsyth. She is a regenerative healing educational consultant. We're going to be talking about the rise of regenerative medicine, how regenerative alternatives compare with traditional pharma and other treatments that we've gotten used to over the last 50, 60 years or so. And then we're going to talk about protocols to better health. You can call. Oh, Sarah, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming on. And folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Sarah, you You have a long and significant track record in the field of medicine. Tell us about your journey from family medicine and how you got interested in regenerative medicine.
I think probably my interest started when I was young, and I think it's seeds get planted at different points in your life. And I think when I became a physician, and as I started to see that kind of my hopes for what medicine would be were not what I thought they would be, just as I went through my training, and the outcomes I was seeing with the pharmaceutical regimens that were standard protocol, I think a lot of my experience as a child really came up. My grandmother ran a nutritional foundation, and I just kind of grew up around it without thinking much of it. But I was often around elderly people that were quite healthy and active, and outliving and lived quite natural lives. And that kind of, I think, was just the standard. And after going through medicine and, you know, working in large academic center training there, and then moving out into the community and having kind of a recipe book through my academy about how we would treat various ailments and how we would work them up. Over the years, you know, I was a bit disenchanted. I would see patients really just get decline and sicker and sicker each time they come into the hospital, and outpatients, you know, addressing their hypertension or their high cholesterol and, you know, putting them on the medications, you know, one by one, adding each additional one and just not seeing much movement. And I just always had a sense that, you know, I really feel like I'm working against bigger things, and we're not doing well. And so I think seeing that, and then also, and I think what typically happens a lot of times, I think, when people enter more natural medicine is that they have healing crises within their own families. And so we definitely had those with our children. They did not do well under the allopathic system. I didn't do well. And it took many years to kind of realize what was what, because there wasn't really a good algorithm in any of my academy journals to really explain what was happening. But I knew they weren't doing well. I knew I wasn't doing well. And I had seen much healthier people. And as a college student, I was actually an anthropology major, and I did an honors program in medical anthropology at UCLA. And a lot of my interest in that was learning about other more traditional cultures and how they lived, how they prepared their food, how they farmed, how they made their medicine. And I got very interested in a lot of those ethnologies, and just because luckily there are a lot of people collecting that data and kind of just understanding the level of health that people that were still living in their native ecosystems were enjoying, and kind of understanding how we were living was very different and very separate from the ecosystem that we used to live in and be a part of. Yeah. And so that, I think, all of those things really kind of helped me. And I think, you know, I probably would say it was the health issues of my children that really, I think any time you do anything for your kids. And so I think that probably was the most committed that I ever became. And so I just read volumes. Like, I couldn't get enough information. And I went back and read the entire library that my grandmother had, that she, because they had really been a consortium internationally for collecting health studies, natural health studies from around the world. And so I was very lucky to have that and kind of look back and say, okay, what was being done in this area? And, you know, what is there? Because it was hard to find things on the internet, and it still can be. And luckily it's getting easier, and there are more and more consortiums of different levels of practitioners that are looking at the newest data. And luckily internationally, a lot of research is done on plant compounds and food systems. And so we're lucky to be able to enjoy those.
Well, yeah.
And that's how.
Well, it's interesting. It is. I think we talked about, you know, I for an old guy, I consider myself to be reasonably healthy, but I'm just constantly, constantly amazed about people who are younger than me, or my age, or even younger, I mean, whatever, that are just suffering from these chronic, almost intractable illnesses that they just that modern medicine can't shake. And I know we're going to get more into details on this stuff, and I think this is a really, really timely thing for to be talking to our audience about. So you wrote me a very nice email. It was very small print, but it was very nice email about what regenerative medicine. And I didn't have to use a magnifying glass, but I just want to quote you. You wrote that you consider regenerative medicine as redesigning our lives to allow for the innate healing that exists within the ecosystems in our planet. So I think you touched on that, but could you drill a little deeper on what you mean by that?
Sure. Yeah, so and that's the way I look at it. I think you could talk to a lot of different practitioners, and depending on how they've come to be where they are, they might look at things differently, and they might emphasize different types of treatment protocols. But I think because of my studying in anthropology, I think my interest in plants specifically, I've really led me to look at ecosystem health. And I've long thought about what makes us different than ancestors that truly enjoyed great health. And I think some of that data was the most interesting to me. There's a lot of literature that came out of shipping logs in the 1800s that I thought was fascinating. Basically, they would collect data and speak to different tribes, I guess would be the best way, but all over the world, groups living in areas where the ecosystems hadn't been changed, where there wasn't industrial agriculture, but pretty much people were living in the ecosystem they inherited and their ancestors lived in. And it was very interesting that in temperate zones, you know, people were living to 150, 160 years of age. They were running around at 90. And in more equatorial zones, they tended to live to about 120, 130. But they did not have congenital disorders. There was not mental illness. It was a very slow degeneration. And just mental health was very high. Physical endurance and health was impeccable. And just to be able to see those snapshots and understand that was an existence for us and probably and everywhere on our planet, and where people really adapted and evolved to the ecosystems from which their people came from. And I think just from an evolutionary perspective, to really think the nuts and bolts of it, we tend to really separate ourselves, but obviously we were created on this planet. And if you are, you know, if you agree with the thought that we evolved from unicellular organisms and we became more and more complex, we understand just the infinite number of things that had to go right in the right amount of time to even happen in the amount of time that it has. If it's about, 4.5 billion years that we think our planet's been around, you know, the number of things that had to go right, there is an organizing intelligence that would have to be available to make us possible. Because really, we're the amount of organisms that we have on the planet, the complexity that we have, is truly a miracle. If there isn't an organizing intelligence, and so my point being that we come from our planet. We are made of our planet. The forces that made our planet and made such an elegant design of everything that is on our planet and that is in constant conversation with us and with each other. The plants are communicating. The animals are communicating. We once communicated better. But understanding that if you look at it from a scientific perspective, the communication, if you want to look at it, is really taking place through microbes. You know, there's debate on how many independently functioning microbes we all have besides our human cells, but it's at least half. And they are in constant communication and sharing genetic information and sharing information about the experiences and stresses they're having in the environment. And they're changing to improve the efficiency of their function. And they're sharing that information with us and with the plants share with one another. They share with the animals. And it is that these wild ecosystems that are self-maintaining, they're ever becoming more stable. This is how they stabilize themselves. It's how they rely on diversification of microbes in higher organisms to create bounty. And we are a part of that. And as much as we can remember that, we will share in that well-being. And so I think that really is what I think is the major force. Now, I mean, there's lots of ways to break that down and decide how are we going to re-enter that harmony? How are we going to re-enter that conversation to be healthy? And I think that's really what I'd like my role to be. But I think that really is our ecosystem. They're going to be a reflection of our health, and our health is a reflection of their health. So
many of us grew up with the notion, well, you just take a pill for something to fix yourself.
Right.
So regenerative medicine kind of flies in the face of that a little bit. But I mean, I have to say, I think, your field has gotten a big boost from COVID in that many more people have lost faith in big pharma and the stuff that was being fed to us literally so tell us a little bit about, I mean, how did it become, I mean, and we talked a little bit about this how did it become that big pharma became so big and took control of our lives?
Well, I guess just like I would say any industry, I think I look at it that way, is, you know, our planet is run by fiat, and fiat is the be-all, end-all power, it seems. And people who print fiat create the debt and then issue currency, which is quite centralized, and they have investments. And I think just like anything, we have a global economy, and I think that it is fairly centrally controlled, and there's a lot of power that is disseminated that way. So I think that just in anything, I think it reflects the creation of fiat. And unfortunately, I think that medicine is quite lucrative for biotech and pharmaceutical companies, just like anything, just like gas, energy, power, technology. It feeds a central fiat system. And so that really becomes the bottom dollar. And there are... I think it's simply that. But I don't know that it's a game that most of us are really a part of, but I do think it controls a lot of what we have access to in terms of knowledge and how our governments operate. And I think that's just kind of a sad reality.
Yeah.
And not to sound oppressive, that being said, we all have choices. So how much we decide to participate in certain systems and understanding how global economic systems work, I think it's a personal decision about how we decide how we want to live, because it affects everything we do. I mean, all of us, how we spend our day and how much fiat we can generate to meet the needs of our families. We're participating in a system to get what we need. And I think at some point we decide, what are the things that we want to do for ourselves? What are the responsibilities we want to take back for ourselves and not have to trade in our life, our labor for fiat, which we really might not get a very good deal.
There you go.
You know, I think that unfortunately a lot of the skills and craftsmanship and really a lot of the needed things that humans do really don't get well repaid by a fiat system. We're kind of seeing fiat systems. People who do well in fiat systems are people that are in fiat. And so I think in the end, it comes back to connection. And again, it comes back to the ecosystem connection. The closer we live to our ecosystems, the more responsible for them, the more it has to give us, and the more intimate and rewarding I think our lives are. So whether that's how we grow our food or participate in some way of growing food, how we participate in managing our own resources, building our own things, having more local economies. I think there's just a lot to be said. And I think I see our food systems and our medicine systems are really going to be they have those same rules. So I think we'll get out of them what we put into them. But I think it's our responsibility, ultimately. I feel like the more we give away central authority, we're going to lose.
But we're coming up on a break here in about 2 minutes. And I just wanted you to touch on a few terms that I think are important, because I run up against them all the time in my end of the insurance business. You know, what role do epigenetics and genomics play in the whole fundamental thing of, you know, regenerative medicine? Yeah.
So, again, so going back to ecosystems, that everything that we eat is sharing genetic information with us. It's sharing microRNA. It's sharing proteins. It's sharing, obviously, even if you just look at the contents of essential fatty acids or minerals, anything that you are taking in is going to be a communication. It's going to provide a signal, and it's going to have repercussions on the intra and intercellular level. So these are communications. So epigenetics is really... a lot of it really has to do with the individually functioning biomes of the different organisms that we share our ecosystems with. So largely for us, it's going to be what we're breathing, what we're drinking, and what we're eating. And so these will they will share genetic information. They will also elicit responses from our immune system. It will basically be a diplomatic discussion about what is allowed in and what is not allowed in. And it's how we adapt. I mean, that's really the entire point. Mm-hmm. Is how do we assess what's in our environment, and then how does our body respond appropriately?
And then one of the terms that I picked up and one of the things that you sent me was a term called active metabolites. What are those?
I'm trying to remember. Well, so many things. So every time we eat something or take a medicine, like a compound, often the form that it's in will not bind to receptors to have an intracellular signal. And okay. So sometimes what happens is it has to be processed through the liver. It has to be broken down. It could happen in the kidney.
Got it.
But bottom line is having a metabolite that actually has a function and an action on a receptor.
Well, that's great. I hear the music, so I'm going to put you on hold, Sarah. So stand by. All right. And folks, when we return, we'll be back with Dr. Sarah Forsythe, regenerative healing educational consultant. And we're going to talk about some more. We're going to drill down into more aspects of what regenerative medicine can really help with. So stand by. We'll be back in about 2-3 minutes.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero. The best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs. Everything you want.
I'm Tom Graham. The clock is ticking closer to President Trump's 8 p.m. Eastern Time deadline. He's demanding Iran open the Strait of Hormuz or else.
The president warning of severe consequences if an agreement is not reached. And it comes after new strikes conducted by U.S. jets overnight targeted Iran's Karg Island. This is an island responsible for 90% of Iran's crude oil exports.
Fox's Trey Yinks. The Justice Department announcing today it's creating a division to focus on government fraud nationwide. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche.
With over $1 trillion at stake every single year, threatened by increasingly sophisticated and opportunistic fraudsters, the time for this comprehensive and coordinated approach is now.
Trump administration increasing focus on fraud, starting with investigations in Minnesota. America is listening to Fox News.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Dr. Sarah Forsythe, regenerative healing and educational consultant. This would be a great time for you to call in with questions or text in with questions or comments. 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Sarah, let's drill down into what regenerative medicine has been successful at so far, really, with helping people. So what are the common kind of treatments that you're seeing out there and the primary approaches?
Well, currently, just because I'm working in orthopedics right now, so a lot of my focus has been on musculoskeletal health. And so a lot of what I've had focused on recently has been, well, it's been much more simplistic, actually, than what I was doing before, but I find it interesting because there are, you know, there are people who will have a joint replacement, and then 2 or 3 years later, their bone aches, and I'll look, and they're, but not everything will be fine. Meaning there's no signs of infection, the joint is, the replacement's in place. And then you'll look through medication lists, and that's been really very interesting for me. And about half dozen of their medications will cause joint pain as a side effect. And I think you realize there are a lot of questions every time someone is having pain and having an inflammatory response that causes pain. And basically a bigger issues come to the floor. And some of that has been very interesting to address, to really say, okay, you've had some level of inflammation that has gone on. It doesn't just show up in the joint. It shows up everywhere. And usually you can get that from someone's history. And so then you'll kind of go back and look at, okay, how is the gut being regulated? Meaning, is the gut does it have appropriate microbiome so that it's making enough short-chain fatty acids that are really important for regulating and feeding the immune system? And so you'll look at it from that perspective. That immune system is going to be giving signals for reparation, meaning does the joint lining, do the tendons, do they have the minerals that they need? Do they have the substrates that they need to assimilate nutrients, make energy, recycle nutrients, and remove metabolic waste? And so these become bigger questions because these are why people are having continued discomfort in their bones, their joints, even though it's perfect. Everything looks like, at least anatomically, that it is working well. But we're really seeing that on a metabolic level, and which informs our immune system and our nervous system, there's not a lot of regulation. And so that has been quite helpful. And beyond diet, gut health, having appropriate macronutrients, so fats, proteins are very important for enzymes. Enzymes are really the biochemistry that makes everything happen in the cell. It's what all our signaling involves. Addressing all of those things is very important in getting cells to modulate. And that's really the goal of regenerative medicine, is how are we modulating our responses? We're not trying to force the body to go one way or the other, which is quite a pharmaceutical or allopathic approach, because in my opinion, we're not intelligent enough to do that. But food and plants are, and they've been doing it since the beginning of time. And so, for example, I mean, a very useful plant is curcumin longa, so that's turmeric. And it has many compounds, but the most well-studied is curcumin. And at high doses, that works very well. It does numerous things. But what it's great at is it's great at regulating the immune response. And so it's getting a balance of helping repair, but it's helping give an organized repair. So anytime you're stressing a bone, a joint, a ligament, you want there to be repair, but you want it to be organized. You don't want too much. You don't want too little. And these plant compounds, and this being one, is a very good modifier of this. It supports that regulated response. It also is an antioxidant, so it helps protect neurons. It helps protect, cells of everywhere, actually. It protects neurons in the brain, but it also protects myocytes in the heart, in the muscles, and it's very in chondrocytes that lie in our joints. So we're doing numerous things that each time we introduce a plant. It also carries out toxins. So that an example would be metals that do not serve our respiratory chain wells. Obviously in the world we live in, people are exposed to things such as mercury, cadmium, aluminum, and these will impair our ability to make energy because they tend to bind more strongly to a lot of our protein complexes in our cells, like in our mitochondria where we make energy, which is crucial for life, for conducting all processes of life. But these proteins are very sensitive, and when those toxins bind there, they will do often irreversibly until those proteins actually break down. And then those metals are released, and they can be reabsorbed into healthy cells again. So they're quite difficult to remove. So having plants that will bind those metals and move them graciously out of the body is a real benefit to improving health. So I would say that's been a big one, is modifying joint pain with or without joint replacement, modifying bone pain, different sources of musculoskeletal pain, and really using a healthy anti-inflammatory that works for many different aspects of health for those cells.
So the real culprit in our lives is inflammation, and probably is a lot of this is environmental from. And again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong. You know, petrochemicals.
Yes, they all institute dysregulated immune responses. Yeah, they all increase IL-1, IL-6, tumor necrosis factor, NF-kappa-B. They're an extreme amount. They cause an extreme amount of oxidative stress, so they're kind of these free radicals, and they don't break down, and they tend to kind of go around and snag and oxidize our proteins, basically. It's kind of having just just fireworks, I guess, would be a way of traveling around the body, you know, damaging the lining of our endothelium, like our vasculature, our neurons, and they're very difficult for our body to break down.
What about something that keeps coming up recently, and I don't know if you've looked into this, so if you haven't, that's okay, but I just saw an article about the dangers of microplastics. This is a new thing, and have you looked into much of that, and have any thoughts on it?
So, you know, the phthalate family, which are in microplastics, and there's some that are stable, you know, the plasticizers that make things flexible, and then, you know, there are those that are volatile, which I actually think are a bigger deal because they're actually being inhaled and they can enter directly into the brain. And they're neurotoxins, meaning they have direct degenerative effects on our neurons. And we have some neurons that can regenerate, but others do much less well. And, you know, there's just isn't a lot of real estate in the brain. And the other issue is that they directly damage DNA. So when there's replication or repair, they're actually known to stop repair processes. So, you know, we have brain factors that support growth, but it actually blocks neural growth factors in the brain as well. So they work on a many-prong approach that are quite devastating neurologically. And one of the biggest things is actually not just in the brain, but actually it's the neurologic cells or the neurons that are in our hearts, our pacemaking cells. So we're seeing a lot more arrhythmias in younger people, and especially women. They don't have large vascular disease. You know, their arteries aren't clogged, but they have damage to their pacemaking cells. And so we're seeing a lot of AFib, which can lead to heart failure. And we're seeing a lot of medicating for this, which in the end is just anytime we take a medication, it's going to have impacts on our cellular metabolism. And there are consequences for every medication we take as well.
Yep.
So it may be necessary to control a certain symptom, but in the long run, you're going to be looking at you're going to have less longevity in critical cells throughout the body. So
I know that your
microplastics are big.
Yeah, I know your approach to this is mostly nutritional in many regards, but I'm looking at like this list of stem cell therapy, platelet-rich plasmas, tissue engineering, yada yada yada. I mean, do any of these have any promise, or is this just where all the research money is going?
Well, I think that's true because it's
because it sounds sexy.
So I think that, but I do. I mean, we do PRP, so we spin down blood product for patients, and it does separate out important cytokines and cell signalers that signal for repair, and it does show benefit for increased repair of tendons. Now, I think it's great, but I don't think it's a good idea to rely on these alone, because anytime you're not making lifestyle changes, you're going to be fighting against what you're giving yourself. So you might put on a longer Band-Aid. So I think it makes sense if you're wanting to make changes to remove the triggers that have caused the degeneration in your tendons and the reason. I mean, I guess my point is you don't just get arthritis. You don't just get tendinopathy. It's not that you're just old. there are environmental triggers that we are taking in, and we're choosing too often. I mean, obviously, we aren't going to live in a perfect world, but we make choices about what we bring into our house. We make choices about what we surround our house with. We make choices about our food and our medicine, and those will ultimately decide what you're going to face in terms of degeneration. And so I think that it is very beneficial, PRP, but I wouldn't do it alone. I think if you don't make necessary lifestyle changes, if you're still smoking, you're still drinking, you still are eating out of plastic, which is an endocrine disruptor and causes insulin resistance and causes pro-inflammatory signaling in your adipose sites, your fat cells, you know, these are all things that are going to be working against your PRP working. So you can pay money for that, but I think it's really important in the long run. If you want it to really work, you're going to have to do the work to manage your immune response and to make sure you have a coordinated repair process for your tendons. And I think it makes, and it's not just for your joints. When you make these changes, you're going to feel better. Your brain will work better. You're going to have better cognitive function. You're going to have better sensation in your hands and in your feet, and you're going to see better. I mean, you're repleting critical functions across your organ system. So, there are benefits to that. But there also might be downsides. We don't really know. We haven't been doing it a ton. And I don't know that we even test for it. I think probably spinning down a little bit of blood product will always be fine. And I don't think people are going to be doing it. You know, you're not doing it a dozen times. So I think it's probably fine. But anytime you're stimulating and you're overriding anything that your body does, there will always be consequences. And I think that's the main point. My point is anytime we aren't giving our body a choice, there's going to be a consequence, because our body is far more intelligent than we will ever be.
All right. A couple of things, you know, if somebody comes and sees a specialist like you in regenerative healing, what are their base labs that you start with? I mean, do you take blood, you know, have those types of things? What do you look at?
So I really do a good detailed history. And typically I will take the labs that they've got from their primary care, because there's a lot you can do for the most part, because there's so much basic work in terms of how do we normalize your cholesterol. So that's going to be reducing your oxidative stress. So what are the different ways we do that? By healing your gut, by adding botanicals that are antioxidants. Those are the first things we're going to be doing. I think the only lab, I think a lot of the changes really are, a lot of labs aren't really necessary unless someone is not improving, which typically when they do those things, they're not. Like, you could order an oxidized LDL, so that's a little more specific. That isn't in a typical lab, although it's becoming more and more common. There's other testing such as organic acid testing, which looks at metabolites from the Krebs cycle or your respiratory cycle. So in your mitochondria, we make energy. You can look at that, because that can be an indicator if someone has ongoing mold exposures, if they have pesticide exposure, if they've got certain heavy, if they're metal stores that are important to address. A lot of the changes that we do baseline will actually help all of those issues anyway, but if people aren't improving, then it can be important to nail those down. But I tend to use very gentle protocols for the long term. I don't think heavy-handed work is necessary. There is more than enough just available in what I would say is safe as food, medicines that move out toxins, that really get organ systems cooperating. So I think, you know, I feel like a lot of times there's a lot of fancy tests that I don't think are necessary. I feel like a lot more has to happen at a baseline. So for example, people who have dysbiosis, a lot of times they'll do a lot of stool culture testing. And obviously they'll, look for certain overgrowth, breath tests, but it's small intestinal bowel overgrowth, but, actual overgrowth. But I find that making a lot of these basic changes with certain gut protocols is actually quite helpful. And I don't think use of heavy antibiotics is actually helpful. Instead, I think it's very helpful to rotate, different botanicals that modulate bacterial numbers that really help. You really want a healthy balance. You don't want to have a mass eradication, because in the end, you're going to have to deal with those repercussions.
Yeah.
It's much better if you can add in diverse foodstuffs and botanicals that actually bring those microbes with them. And so you're really focusing on repopulating in a healthy way and then taking an appropriate prebiotic food so that you can support the healthier balance of microbes that you're bringing in.
Right.
So I think, I think pretty much a lot of things can be done without much else. I mean, I think that those are basic tests that might be added. But other than that, pretty much what you come in with can be worked with. And because I think, 95% of the information we need is really in a good history, a long history from early on, because disease takes decades to occur. Not, even though it might be some acute event that made someone think, oh, I'm sick now, but really there were changes over time that were critical, and exposures they had over time that were very important.
So
eliminating those makes a big difference.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we got like 2 minutes left. I know we're going to spend some time on the other side of the break talking about some of your nutritional tips to help in this area. But can you share one or two successful regenerative, where your treatments have really helped a patient?
Sure. Yeah, I have found that in treating RA, rheumatoid arthritis, okay. I've found that the gut protocols that I use, and I really focus on mitochondrial flexibility in terms of modulating the immune system. That has been quite helpful. And then the use of a lot of antioxidant plants, such as Oregon grape or berberine. I use a lot of turmeric and curcumin. I also use a lot of lymphagogues. So lymphagogues are something that really helps, in a general sense, just kind of reset the immune system peripherally. So it really helps clean up the lymphatic system so that we can, so our immune system has a better chance of deciding what are important immune responses now, so that we're not conducting old antibody and complement searches that are no longer serve us, that tend to be a part of prolonged inflammatory derangements. I work with adaptogens a lot. These are an important plant group that really helps protect the immune system and organ systems from stress. They tend to help modulate basically how our joint lining responds, how our tendons respond. They tend to decrease fibrosis and inflammation.
Okay.
So, for example, I use Romania for RA.
Hold that thought, because I hear the bumper music. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Sarah about her nutritional education program that can help patients reduce weight, improve metabolism, and tissue repair. So I'm going to put you on hold here, Sarah. And folks, we'll be right back in about 3 minutes. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Investors were on edge, but the major averages recouping some losses and finishing mixed as President Trump's deadline for Iran to open the Strait of Hormuz is fast approaching. U.S. oil prices rose to around $112 a barrel. Consumer staples and industrials were the worst performers, while energy and tech gained. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly lower, led by Apple and Tesla. Shares of Apple sank 2% after Nikkei Asia reported that its long-anticipated foldable phone has hit engineering snags and may face shipping delays. Shares of airlines and cruise operators fell on concerns about higher fuel cost. The Dow winners, United Health, Chevron, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow decliners, Apple, Home Depot, and Honeywell. The Dow falling 85 points, the Nasdaq up 22, S&P 500 up 5. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Sarah Forsyth, MD, Regenerative Healing Educational Consultant. You can call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week, I'm taking off. Eric Gorham will be here as my guest host. He's got a great lineup. Ryan Rundell, who's a Cal Poly almost graduate. He's leading the Young Republicans in the TPUSA chapter at Cal Poly, and he's got a lot to say. I met him at the Steve Hilton event that the Republican women put on a month or so ago, and he's a delight to talk to. And then we have our old friend Laura Deloy from the Alzheimer's Association coming on. She's going to be talking about some upcoming programs and what's going on with brain health, but she's also bringing in a young lady. Again, she just graduated from Cal Poly. Her name is Amber Petito. She's a graduate in communications, but she also just cared for her mother who passed away recently, who was suffering from Lewy body disease, Alzheimer, a form of Alzheimer's, dementia. And she's going to tell her story and how that impacted her very young life. So, Sarah, again, thanks for being with us today. This has been so informative. So before we get to the home stretch here, how's the best way for people to get in touch with you and learn more about how you can help them?
I am at the same office that my husband works out of. So it's Kevin Forsyth, MD, Inc., and I'm there in that office, which is Las Tablas. But you could use a Doc Forsyth at Mac.com would probably be the easiest if you want to email. I actually Sadly, I don't even have the phone number here for that office. That I honestly don't know the office number by heart. But he can. But you can always just reach out by email. But it's easy to look him up. He's Dr. Kevin Forsyth, orthopedic surgery, and so I'm in that same office, so I can be reached there.
Great. Well, and folks, full disclosure, Kevin is my orthopedic guy, my knee guy. He's been taking care of the old guy for years here. So if you need the number, send me an email and I'll get that to you. So anyway, so let's talk. You know, you sent me a list of, I want to say there's about 10 or 15 different choices, things here. We have about 4 minutes left in the show, 3 minutes left.
Sure.
So what do you think are the highlights of your generational nutritional and lifestyle program?
I think the highlights are just kind of narrowing down how to improve mitochondrial function. So there's just different things you can do, from eating windows to really getting your macronutrients appropriate, and then really looking at the response. It's a gut healing protocol that's critical. I think those are very important. The others are just the use of botanicals that really help re-regulate the immune system, really help organs, really support organ systems. So you're really supporting your excretory system, so your liver, your kidneys. In terms of, we talked about a gut protocol, but there are a lot of botanicals that actually are very important, such as the bitters. It's one of the most ignored systems, but bitters, these bitter receptors really help not only move bile out of the body, which removes toxins, but it also is critical for absorption of minerals that are involved in really every intracellular process and communication. And they also, a big thing that gets overlooked is that bitters are also, we have bitter receptors throughout our entire body, and they prevent cancer. They actually treat cancer.
What are bitters really? What are they?
So bitters are anything, we identify as anything that has a bitter taste. And obviously bitter can mean toxic, but we have a wide review, a large knowledge base of bitters that are helpful. So just arugula, radicchio, those are easy ones to get in from food. But there are a lot of plants that are more medicinal in nature. You're not going to eat them for a meal, but such as Oregon grape, or the whole berberis family. They are critical in stimulating immune modulation on receptor sites on the cell, on cell membranes throughout different organ systems. And so they're critical at deciding when is it appropriate for a cell to grow, when is it appropriate for it to divide, where is that needed, and where is it regulated, because you obviously don't want cells that are growing and dividing inappropriately. And so these, those from food to botanical compounds are bitters that are huge, and they're huge in our brain also for modulating inflammation. And a critical thing to understand is that a lot of the mental health and neurodegenerative changes we see, these are all inflammatory changes as well. And so it's very key to get those immune regulatory sites modified with appropriate botanicals, foods, and then obviously not to expose yourself to triggers that are causing dysregulated immune responses. And we talked a little bit about those, like volatile phthalates, but anything from exhaust to pesticides, they have binding sites that dysregulate immune responses, and they act as foreign antigens. They will stimulate immune response within the neurologic system. And so it's critical to make sure that we're not exposing ourselves to these to heal our brain.
And diet and high intensity exercise is really important, isn't it?
Yes. High intensity intermittent training is a huge benefit to move between that place of aerobic to anaerobic exercise is key to mobilizing. It's basically mobilizing toxins out of the body, and also get your body to release its own antioxidants. Our most powerful antioxidants are released by exercise.
All right. Well, I hear the music. Sarah, thank you so much for taking time with us today. We'll have you back again, okay? Thank you so much.
Take care. Thanks, Barry.
Bye-bye. Right.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Eric will be in next week with my guests, our guests, and Have a great rest of the week. Take care.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.